Greetings and volumetric iterations, my libationally innocent listeners, and welcome to this July 2017 Science News Update. I'm your host for this Deltonially Socratic Science Podcast segment, Jim Campanella. Welcome to the 9th anniversary of this Science Podcast segment. Hard to believe I've been sounding off on the sofa for so long, isn't it? And I can keep easy track of how long it's actually been, since it's the same age as my son. At any rate, let's get this aging show on the road. I'm not even sure how to start this first story, or whether it's even a story at all. I'll let you guys be the judge. Okay, so I listened to Kids Place Live on XM Sirius Radio when my kids are in the car. For those of you in Europe or elsewhere, XM is a subscription radio satellite service. At any rate, I was amazed to hear a song a couple of weeks back called Serotonin by a musical artist whose name is Mr. Cookie Jar. All right, despite the silly name, Mr. Cookie is a very talented LA musician who specializes in kids' music. And let me tell you, kids' music has changed considerably from my day. The Grammy-winning album, kids' album for this year, by a group called Secret Agent 23 Skidoo, worked with the Asheville Symphony Orchestra to create songs with combinations of classical music and rapping. Unimaginable stuff, which is really quite impressive and complex, given that it's supposed to be for children. But at any rate, I was amazed at the song Serotonin, because as the title might imply, this is a song about the neurotransmitter, serotonin. I could not believe my ears that somebody was actually trying to educate kids not only on serotonin, but on another neurotransmitter called oxytocin. I'll play you a little bit of Mr. Cookie's song in just a moment. Let me read you from his press release about the serotonin song. And forgive the silly voice. I don't get to do them very often as I'd like, here, at least. Mr. Cookie Jar returns with another super catchy postmodern party anthem for all, Serotonin, a celebration of human anatomy's favorite chemical compound, breaking down the elements of uber-electrifying the contagious joy. Mr. Cookie Jar harnesses the power of the heart and brain in a musically inspired concoction of pop, Motown, hip-hop, and EDM. Want endless serotonin? All it takes is endless la-la love. Mr. Cookie Jar got it covered. So let me just play you a bit of Mr. Cookie Jar. Not too much, since we don't want to get into any copyright issues here.
I want endless serotonin. And all it takes is endless la-la-love.
Serotonin, or 5-hydroxytryptamine, is popularly thought to be a contributor to feelings of well-being and happiness. Dig it.
Serotonin, serotonin. You get a boost when your heart's wide open. So be kind and let it shine with emotion. And may your serotonin flow like an ocean. Serotonin and oxytocin, the butterflies in your tummy stop the motion. So stay wise, warm and fuzzy, that's a notion. And may your serotonin flow like an ocean. Flow like a zen master, go pen your own chapter. Happily before, right now, whenever after. Open up doors to warm smiles and laughter. Life's a dance floor, go be a fly dancer. Be goofy, be kooky, stay true. Cause you be one with the force and the force be with you. With you, this you, not you. Do your thing, when you do, everybody in the room gets to ping.
So, as Mr. Cookie Jar explains in his song, serotonin is needed as a stimulating neurotransmitter. It sends signals between your nerve cells. Serotonin is found mostly in the digestive system, although it's also in blood platelets and throughout the central nervous system. Serotonin is made from the essential amino acid tryptophan, and this amino acid must enter the body through your diet, and is commonly found in foods like nuts and cheese and red meat. And tryptophan deficiencies can actually lead to lower serotonin levels. And that can result in mood disorders, like anxiety and depression. Serotonin helps reduce depression, regulate anxiety, heal wounds, stimulate nausea, and maintain bone health. It is quite important. Here's a quote about serotonin from Dr. Barry Jacobs, who's a neuroscientist from Princeton. He says, quote, "Low serotonin levels may explain why some people fall into gang and criminal activities. That culture brings experiences that facilitate serotonin release. Unhealthy attention-seeking behavior can also be a cry for what serotonin brings," unquote. Prozac, fluoxetine, prevents the breakdown of serotonin in depressed individuals and helps to continue their neural stimulation to help keep them happy, or at least not depressed. Oxytocin has been dubbed the love or trust hormone because it's believed to facilitate bonding and trust and attachment. But the role and function of oxytocin isn't exactly quite that straightforward. It's part of an entire suite of brain chemicals, along with serotonin, that coordinate social function. For example, oxytocin facilitates bonding between males and females, and mothers and offspring. It helps with interpretation of social cues, allowing people to quickly assess facial expressions and make friend or foe kinds of judgments. It also plays a role in the way people respond to stress by promoting a sort of calming anti-anxiety effect. Another popular neuroscientist, Dr. Paul Zak of Loma Linda University, suggests that a simple way to keep oxytocin flowing is to give somebody a hug. Quote, he says, "Interpersonal touch not only raises oxytocin, but reduces cardiovascular stress and improves the immune system. Rather than just a handshake, go in for the hug. I recommend at least 8 each day," unquote. As weird as Mr. Cookie Jar's song about serotonin and oxytocin may be, I gotta give him creds for his positive message. He's trying to tell kids that in order to be happy, you need to help others and make them happy, so that when you help the production of serotonin in others, you create pleasure and happiness in yourself. Okay, it's a trite philosophy, but hey, there's nothing wrong with trite when it teaches the right social message. The big problem with Mr. Cookie Jar's song is that he dreams for oceans of serotonin, endless serotonin. An ocean of serotonin will lead to something called severe serotonin syndrome. Too much serotonin causes symptoms that range from mild, sort of shivering and diarrhea, to severe, rigidity, muscle rigidity, fever, seizures. Severe serotonin syndrome can actually be fatal if it's not treated. Serotonin syndrome occurs when you take medications that cause high levels of the chemical serotonin to accumulate in your body. Serotonin syndrome can occur when you increase the dose of a drug or add a new drug to your regimen. Certain illegal drugs and dietary supplements have also been associated with serotonin syndrome. So, what's my point here? Moderation in all things, Mr. Cookie Jar, even when it comes to things that are the core of your neurologic happiness. You don't want too much happy, man. Okay. Let's see if we can wander back out of left field into some other news. And yes, let's go into right field. So my son is a strict carnivore, and he was horrified with the next story to the point where he refuses to go on hikes here on the East Coast now, the U.S. anymore. What's the story? Well, Megan Multaney, who's a staff writer for the popular magazine Wired, reported on a strain of tick called the Lone Star tick found in the southern U.S. that has made its way as far north as Long Island and even lower New England. So what's so special about this tick that has a star on its back? Well, here it is. After one bite of this tick, you will develop a dangerous allergy to meat. I can hear the gasps of shock out there in podcast land from my fellow lovers of roast beef and bacon. Oh, the horror, the horror. So yeah, one bite is enough to reprogram your immune system to forever reject even the smallest nibble of perfectly crisp bacon. For years, physicians and researchers only reported the allergy in places the Lone Star tick calls home, which is, again, the southeastern U.S. But recently, it started to spread north, where at least 100 cases have been reported in the last year or so. And scientists are going a little nuts, racing to trace its spread and to understand if the Lone Star tick is expanding into new territory, or if maybe some other species of tick has now caused the allergy in other places. Dr. Thomas Platts Mills of University of Virginia is the world's leading expert on the Lone Star tick. He's reported that something in the tick's saliva hijacks humans' immune systems. It red flags a sugar protein molecule called alpha-gal. This sensitivity then triggers the massive release of histamines whenever red meat is consumed. Red meat has loads of alpha-gal protein, which will then cause the allergic response to the meat. Platt Mills says, quote, "There's something special about this tick, usually a mix of genes and environmental factors combined to create allergies. That's why they can be so unpredictable in families or between families. However, when it comes to the Lone Star tick's bite, it doesn't matter if you're predisposed or not. Just one bite, and you can render anyone really, really allergic." Unquote. Although vegans are hardly sympathetic, Platts Mills is now busy communicating the scale of this public health problem. Every day he checks local news headlines to log new cases of catastrophic hamburger aversion. And he spends hours on the phone gathering the latest data from allergy clinics and academic centers around the world. He's building the first real red meat allergy incidence map of the U.S. Because state health departments aren't required to report alpha-gal syndrome to the CDC. As far as a cure, well, there is none. Megan Mulcahy offers two suggestions. Her two suggestions are EpiPens and veggie burgers. She's hilarious, isn't she? Well, one thing that's not clear from the article, which frankly kind of annoys me, is the allergic reaction of the victims to protein from fowl, like chicken and duck, or other species like fish. It's never clearly mentioned whether the tissues of chickens have alpha-gal or not. I would not even bring this up, except that the article mentions red meat very specifically. I have no idea whether that's the case or not, but it would have been nice to know. At any rate, it certainly brought a bit of hopefulness to my son when I pointed it out. If he got bit by the Lone Star tick, that there may be a loophole that he could eat bird meat. He smiled for a brief second until I mentioned turkey bacon, because, frankly, even my son, the avowed carnivore, is not very fond of turkey bacon. Next story. In June, Chinese scientists broke the distance record for sending quantum entangled data. In their experiment, a satellite distributed single photons between two ground stations 750 miles apart. Researchers from multiple science institutions in China locked their telescopes onto a green laser in search of their real prize. And that was a delicate single infrared photon produced by a special crystal on the satellite producing the lasers. They filtered out the green light, and they were able to latch onto their quarry, which is a quantum signal, the likes of which has never been sent. China launched a $100 million satellite known as Quantum Experiments at Space Scale, QESS, last August from the Jinquan Satellite Launch Center in the Gobi Desert. Before the launch, researchers placed a complicated system of lasers and mirrors and a special crystal on board. When a specific laser shone on the crystal, it would create pairs of light particles known as entangled photons. The crystal makes 6 million pairs of photons at a time, but on the ground, the two ground stations could only detect one pair per second. The leader of the project, Dr. Chao Yang Lu from University of Science and Technology of China, thinks quantum cryptography could be the encryption tool of the future. Properly executed, the protocol goes like this. You first measure the characteristics of photons to generate a key of ones and zeros, and you send those to your intended recipient. Then you encrypt your message with the key and send it. If a hacker tries to steal the key in transit, quantum mechanics theory says they'd instantly change it to a different set of numbers. Think of Schrödinger's cat. Remember Schrödinger's cat? It was both dead and alive at the same time when you're not looking at it, but it becomes one thing or the other when you actually pay attention to it. In the same way, the hacker would instantly change the state of the photons that make up the key. So in theory, it's physically impossible to hack. Liu says his group is planning to perform the same experiment from a new satellite with an even higher orbit, which would be able to send quantum keys between cities that are even further apart. They want to exchange quantum keys between China and Austria, where some of their collaborators work. By 2030, Liu says that China plans to launch a fleet of these quantum satellites to create a global network. Because China is very lucky, he says, and benefits from a very fast decision-making political system, which other countries don't have. Next story. For those of you following along with the political football that has now become the funding for science in the U.S., the U.S. House of Representatives, a couple of weeks ago, proposed their own budget in response to President Trump's. A series of recent spending bills from the U.S. House of Representatives Appropriations Committee are rolling back Trump's requested science cuts for the 2018 fiscal year. According to a House news release, the bill that allots funding to the National Science Foundation, NASA, and other agencies proposes a $4.8 billion overall increase in discretionary funding when compared with Trump's 2018 budget, although the NSF would still see a decrease in its budget overall. Priorities for the bill include national security and continuing investments in space exploration programs and advancing groundbreaking science and technology. Quote, however, in order to make these investments, lower priority programs will be reduced or eliminated, unquote, according to this news release. The new bill allots about $7.3 billion total for NSF, which is a $133 million cut to this year's funding level. But as the journal Science reports, that's $685 million above what Trump had requested, even though it's still a cut. NSF's budget for research and related activities wouldn't change from this year, though. The journal Science also points out, quote, the biggest variation to NSF's budget from 2017 would come in its major research facilities account, which funds new construction, unquote. Of the $183 million that NSF had asked for, $105 million of that were marked for the construction of two research ships, the first of three vessels total, and the proposed bill axes the ships and instead puts those funds toward NSF research instead. And that's not really a problem. I don't know how badly we need the ships. Anyway, NASA, it states in the news release, would see $219 million more in 2018 compared to 2017, and with its science programs receiving $94 million more next year. And this clashes with Trump's intended $600 million cut to NASA's overall budget. All right. So, I try to make the last story of the night related to the wonderful world of reproduction. So here's the question of the hour, especially for parents of young kids out there, and you know who you are. I can tell by your red eyes. And here's the question. Sleep or sex? Which is the more imperative? A recent paper last month in the online journal eLife looked specifically at how at least one animal decides whether procreation or sleep is at the top of their list. Dr. Kyung-hee Ko of the University of Pennsylvania has looked at how the circadian rhythm of fruit flies affects their desire for sleep or sex. All of us have experienced those nights when amorous possibilities have banished sleep from our eyes. The biological need for sleep is often counterbalanced by the drive to perform other tasks, and how this competition between conflicting choices is regulated remains an open question in the field of neurobiology. Ko shows that male fruit flies employ a specific neural circuit to balance the need to sleep and the desire to reproduce. Ko says, quote, "We were interested in the question of how sleep is regulated. We wanted to see, first, whether there was any competition between sleep and courtship. And we also wanted to know in more detail what are the neural mechanisms underlying this competition," unquote. Fruit flies follow a sleep-wake cycle that's very similar to humans, with strict circadian clocks that let them sleep in the night and stay awake in the day. Mating, on the other hand, follows a very elaborate courtship ritual that's initiated by male flies, involving, among other things, extending a wing, tapping several feet, and serenading those special ladies. To investigate how fruit flies react to the conflicting desires of sleeping and mating, Ko and colleagues housed flies overnight in either male-male or male-female pairs. As expected, in the presence of female flies, male flies slept much less than they did in the presence of male flies, and the extra time not dedicated to sleeping was spent courting. This drive to suppress sleep and engage in courtship, however, wasn't constant. If male flies were sexually satiated by being allowed to mate several times prior to the experiment, then they no longer abandoned sleep in favor of courtship. Similarly, if these flies were sleep-deprived for several hours, later, when they were faced with a female, they chose to sleep instead of initiating courtship. Anyway, okay, yeah, that might sound familiar to you parents out there. You have probably experienced the phenomenon of the mind is willing but the body is weak. As you and your spouse drift off into slumber after a long evening trying to get the kids to go to sleep themselves, or for that matter, a long day of entertaining the children. Back to the flies. Decades of research have gone into delineating which circuits regulate fruit fly courtship behavior, and almost 2% of the neurons in the male fruit fly brain express a particular transcription factor called fruitless. This is a protein. And a large number of these neurons are dedicated to male-specific behaviors, including courtship and aggression. When Ko and colleagues began hunting for the neural mechanisms that govern the switch between sleep and courtship, the team came across a small group of neurons that seems to be critically linked to mediating the suppression of sleep by the mating drive. When those neurons were silenced, male flies no longer displayed reduced sleep in the presence of females. These neurons, which the authors called MS1 neurons, all express the neurotransmitter called octopamine. Octopamine is analogous to the human neurotransmitter norepinephrine, which is a neurotransmitter known to regulate wakefulness in mammals. While surprisingly not expressing fruitless themselves, the MS1 neurons formed bidirectional connections with several different groups of fruitless expressing neurons. Ko says, quote, "MS1 neurons receive information from the fruitless network, and they also send information to some other fruitless neurons. We think of it as an amplifier of the signal," unquote. The researchers are currently following up on other neuronal pathways that participate in this male-specific regulation of sleep, as well as trying to dissect the function and connectivity of MS1 neurons. Well, that's all for me for now. As always, take care. Keep that serotonin flowing. Carefully judge whether sleep or procreation is more important. Keep watching the skies. And I hope I've inspired some of you. Until next time, this is Jim Campanella.